Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. In our new series on the podcast, where we answer listeners' questions that get emailed in to me at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com, this week our questions come from William in Amherst, New Hampshire. William asks, after Lee Harvey Oswald's arrest, why wasn't he given a lawyer? What do we know about his interrogation? And was Oswald allowed to make a call in jail? What you just heard was the first recording of Oswald on Friday, November 22nd, the day of the assassination at the Dallas Police Department. Later that day, around 8 p.m., as Oswald was being transferred from one room to another, he had this exchange with reporters in the hallway.
I don't know what this is all about.
I
work in that building.
Were you in the building at the time?
Naturally, if I work in that building, yes, sir.
Back up, man!
No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I live in Missouri. I'm just a
patsy. At the time of this encounter with reporters in the hallway, Oswald had only been charged with the murder of Officer J.D. Tippit. After a third lineup at 7:40 p.m., Oswald was returned to Captain Fritz's office. About an hour later, after further questioning, Oswald's fingerprints and palm prints were taken and a paraffin test was administered, after which the questioning resumed.
Has the gentleman been identified?
Yes, sir. He's been identified for killing the officer.
Right. Has any identification been attempted for the killing of the president?
Not yet.
Not yet.
At 11:26 p.m. on Friday night, November 22nd, Frint signed the complaint charging Oswald with the murder of President Kennedy. Shortly after midnight, detectives took Oswald to the basement assembly room for an appearance of several minutes before members of the press.
Someone to come forward to give me a legal assistance.
Did you kill the president?
No, I've not been charged with that. In fact, nobody has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question.
You have been.
Nobody said what?
Sir?
You have been.
Nobody said what?
Okay, man. Okay.
What did you do in Russia?
That was Oswald, Lee Oswald, who was charged with the murder of the President of the United States, so he said he did not know him.
Because of all the background noise and what's going on in the room, it's really hard to understand what Oswald says, so I'm going to tell you exactly what was said in that press conference. Oswald would say, I know nothing about this situation here. I would like to have legal representation. I was questioned by a judge and protested at that time that I was not allowed legal representation during that very short and sweet hearing. I really don't know what this situation is about. Nobody has told me anything except that I'm accused of murdering a policeman. I know nothing more than that, and I do request that someone come forth to give me legal assistance. A reporter then asks Oswald, "Did you kill the president?" Oswald responds, "No, I have not been charged with that. In fact, no one has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about it was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question." A reporter then tells Oswald that he has been charged with killing the president. Can you believe that he had to hear that he was charged with murdering the president from a reporter? On the video of this encounter, you can see the stunned look on Oswald's face when the reporter tells him that he has been charged with murdering the president. Then a reporter asks Oswald what he did in Russia, and there was no response. Then, as he's leaving the room, a reporter asks him what happened to his eye, and Oswald responds, "A policeman hit me." Oswald is then led out of the room by detectives. I feel like it was important to go over what Oswald did those first few hours he was at the police station. But to answer William's first question, whether Oswald was given a lawyer, the answer is he wasn't even allowed to call one until 1:40 p.m. the next day, which was Saturday, November 23rd. Although he had requested a lawyer many times, Oswald had not been given access to one. Oswald had initially requested New York lawyer John Apt, who was known for his defense of political prisoners. If not Apt, Oswald's second choice was someone from the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. Incidentally, ACLU lawyers did come to the Dallas jail on Friday night to meet with Oswald, but were told by the Dallas police that Oswald did not want an attorney, so the ACLU left without ever speaking to Oswald. Oswald never had a lawyer, and the Dallas police directly prevented him from having one, whether it was intentional or not. But Oswald's lack of legal counsel didn't stop the Dallas police and FBI from questioning him. From the time he was arrested on Friday at 2 p.m. until Sunday morning around 11 a.m. when he was shot, Oswald was interrogated for 12 hours. During this interrogation, there were no recordings made or notes taken. The only source of information about what happened during those 12 hours are reports that were written after the fact, from memory, by some of the people who were present during some parts of the interrogations. This is incredible. Per Captain Will Fritz of Dallas Homicide, lead investigator, there were no tapes or stenographic transcripts of Lee Oswald's interrogations. Just his jotting down of notes and the field reports of various federal agents and recollections of Dallas sheriff deputies written down after the interrogation. Crime of the century and no record of the accused's statements to the police is not believable, not even credible, just bullshit for the gullible. Over that weekend, the Dallas Police, FBI, Secret Service, and U.S. Postal Inspector Harry Holmes each took turns interrogating Oswald. And again, despite all this interrogation, 12 hours worth, not a single word was typed up or recorded. This is inexcusable, and proof of a cover-up if there ever was one. What we do know about the sessions from the notes that were written weeks or sometimes months or years after the questioning is that Oswald reiterated to the police the same things he said to the reporters on camera, that he was a patsy, that he did not shoot the president or Officer Tippit, and that he had previously been in the Soviet Union. There were 5 Secret Service agents and 4 FBI agents who were present for parts of Oswald's interrogations, but for whatever reasons, none of those agents were ever questioned by the Warren Commission or even asked to submit affidavits about their interrogation of Oswald. I know this sounds crazy, but it is absolutely true. The notes, which Captain Will Fritz said he made several days after the interrogations, supported major points he made in 1964 during his testimony before the Warren Commission. Here are some of the highlights of what Oswald said during the interrogation, according to the top notes of Captain Will Fritz. Oswald said he was having lunch on the first floor at the time the president was shot. He said he was on the second floor drinking a Coca-Cola when the police came in. When asked why he left the building, Oswald said that with all the excitement, he didn't think there would be much work left to do for the rest of the day. Oswald said he did not own a rifle, but he did own a shotgun when he lived in Russia. Oswald admitted that he did own a pistol, which he picked up before he went to the Texas Theater. When asked why he brought the pistol, he said, quote, "You know how boys do when they have a gun. They just carry it," end quote. He said he bought the pistol a few months earlier in Fort Worth. Oswald said that he had been in Russia for 3 years, and that he did write to the Russian embassy. He said he spoke Russian and got newspapers from Russia. He said that he belonged to the Fair Play for Cuba committee. He said that he picked up the name Alex Heidel while he was in New Orleans working for the Fair Play for Cuba organization. Oswald denied bringing curtain rods or any sort of long package to work on the day of the assassination. Oswald said the reason he lived in a rooming house away from his wife and children was because his wife needed help with the kids, and Mrs. Payne wanted to learn Russian, so it was a nice arrangement for both of them. Oswald refused to take a polygraph test. Fritz mentions at the end that he had to leave the room frequently to talk to other witnesses and officers as they came in. So there are blocks of time when Oswald was interrogated that are not captured at all in Fritz's notes.
This is Captain Will Fritz of the Dallas Police Department. Chief of Detectives is a man who's known as perhaps one of the most astute crime investigators in the whole Southwest. Captain, where do you think your investigation stands now? Does it look good?
Yes, it looks real good. I think we're in good shape. I think we're in good shape on both cases, both the killing of the president and the killing of the police officer later.
You said a little while ago, sir, that you thought you had it cinched. Do you feel that strongly about it, sir?
Yes, sir, I do. I feel that it's all right.
Could you tell me just one more thing, sir, about the transportation of Oswald? You related some details about that, how you had pinned that down.
His
transportation from the book depository.
Yes, where he worked. He rode a bus for a short distance, got off the bus and caught a cab and rode the cab home and changed his clothing and started the picture show where he encountered the officer that he killed.
That's pretty well nailed down.
That's it, yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Captain. That was Captain Will Fritz, the Chief of Detectives, the man who's heading the investigation in Dallas, Texas, into the assassination of President Kennedy.
In an interview I did with Detective Jim Lavelle in 2004, he told me the same thing he's told many other researchers. Captain Will Fritz specifically told him they didn't have enough to charge Lee Harvey Oswald with the murder of President Kennedy, so they better nail him on the murder of J.D. Tippit. And now to William's third and final question of the week. Was Lee Harvey Oswald allowed to make calls in jail? Well, yes, William, he did. And the story about those calls is fascinating, just like everything else in this case. It was Saturday night, November 23, 1963, and Alveda Treon arrived for her shift at the telephone switchboard of the Dallas Municipal Building. Treon would relieve her co-worker, Lewis Sweeney, who had been given orders by their supervisor to assist two men in listening to a call that would come through their switchboard. Treon assumed the men were Secret Service. She suspected that Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin, being held in a downstairs jail, would be making another call. He had already phoned his Russian wife Marina and an ACLU lawyer in New York. This call, however, was different. Oswald rang the switchboard at 10:45 p.m. Sweeney took the call and scribbled Oswald's information as the two men listened in. Treon would go on to say, quote, "I'll listen and watch very carefully for Mrs. Sweeney to place the call with the long-distance operator. I heard her repeat a number to the caller and saw her write down details on a notation pad, which is a normal routine. She appeared very nervous and visibly shaken. For a few minutes, she just sat there trembling." Quote, "I was dumbfounded at what happened next," Treon later told a former Senate investigator. Quote, "Sweeney told Oswald, 'I'm sorry, the number doesn't answer,'" end quote. Mrs. Treon would later say that her lasting impression of the events that night is that Mrs. Sweeney had been instructed by someone to not put the call through to Oswald. Sweeney then unplugged and disconnected Oswald without ever really trying to put the call through. Afterward, Sweeney tore the sheet from her notepad and threw it into the trash. She left, her shift having ended. Treon retrieved the wadded piece of paper from the trash and copied the information onto a standard long-distance telephone call slip to save as a souvenir. The slip reveals that Oswald had given Treon the name John Hurt of Raleigh, North Carolina. It was through the work of independent researcher Michael Canfield that a copy of the Raleigh call slip first became public. He secured a copy of the slip, which became available as a result of a Freedom of Information lawsuit filed by a civil rights activist while conducting research for the 1975 book Coup d'etat in America. The book was the first major work to deal with the Raleigh phone call, and the slip was reprinted in the appendix. On the slip were two numbers attributed to a John Hurt, one for a John W. Hurt, and one for a John D. Hurt. Canfield called both numbers. John W. Hurt turned up nothing of interest. However, when Canfield spoke to John D. Hurt, he sat stunned, silent when Hurt revealed, quote, "I was in the counterintelligence corps in the Army during World War II," end quote. The fact that Oswald called a former military intelligence officer from jail, only to be assassinated by Jack Ruby a little more than 12 hours later, was notable, and to that point, publicly undisclosed. Victor Marchetti was a 14-year veteran of the CIA, who had served as an executive assistant to then-Deputy Director Richard Helms. Marchetti had also written extensively about the Raleigh call in the book The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence. It was the first book on the assassination censored by the U.S. government. In an interview, Marchetti stated that in calling Hurt, Oswald was clearly following standard procedure for a CIA asset under duress. This includes contacting his case officer through a cutout, an intermediary with no direct involvement in an operation. Marchetti would go on to say Oswald was probably calling his cutout. He was calling somebody who could put him in touch with the case officer. He couldn't go beyond that person. There's no way he could. He just had to depend on this person to say, okay, I'll deliver the message. Now, if the cutout had already been alerted to cut him off and ignore him, then, oh well, Oswald was out of luck. And this was likely what happened, Marchetti said. Now, let's just stop and think about that for a minute. Oswald uses one of his precious phone calls while in jail to reach out to some random guy who just happens to have a background in military intelligence? Oh, come on. What has come to be dubbed the Raleigh call went unrecorded in the Warren Commission investigation? Imagine that. And after all these years, little has come of this story, and mysteries surrounding the call have contributed to assassination conspiracy theories. The details about this phone call have been called by G. Robert Blakely, who was chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, as real, substantiated, and very troublesome, and deeply disturbing. He went on to say that while this is only a small part of the larger mystery of the Kennedy assassination, it raises questions that remain unanswered, makes inferences which are ultimately inconclusive, and therefore an unanswerable mystery. William, I hope we answered your questions. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, and it's on sale. Or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.